My name is Jeff Lerner, and I interview elite performers from a wide range of disciplines, entrepreneurs, athletes, celebrities, scientists, artists, and more. This is Unlock Your Potential. Hello, and welcome to another episode of Unlock Your Potential, where we get to have amazing conversations with amazing human beings. Today, we are joined once again by Dr. Neha Sangwan. We had her on the show. It's only been a couple months. Usually when we do part twos, we let a little more time pass, but she's back by popular demand. Her episode was really well received, which is probably actually a sad state of the world, because she's an expert on stress and burnout, and it's probably so well received because so many people are struggling. But it was an amazing conversation, really, really valuable for me too, as someone that tends to work probably more than they should. But Dr. Sangwan, we're so glad to have you back. Just for the audience's benefit, if they didn't hear that episode, as a reminder, you are a medical doctor, licensed MD, but also CEO and founder of Intuitive Intelligence. In medicine, you practice internal medicine, speaker, corporate communication experts, TED talker, consultant for big, you know, American Heart Association and American Express, big Fortune 500 companies, Google, and so forth. And one of the world's foremost experts on stress and burnout, a person you don't want to need to know, but probably do. Dr. Sangwan, welcome to the show. Welcome back, I should say.
Thank you. And, you know, when you were saying like, oh God, it must be something, you know, about the state of our world that stress and burnout are the things. And I thought, oh yeah. And I also talk about leaning into healthy conflict. So conflict, stress, and burnout makes our world even a little harder. And then also, I'm the author of two books, which is Powered by Me, From Burned Out to Fully Charged at Work and in Life. And then the one on conflict is called Talk RX. So it's, you're right. I kind of walk in when everyone else is running out. So
yeah, but no, definitely a good friend to have and a good person to connect to. In tough times, which seem to be going around. I actually would love, I wish it was not such a fertile subject these days, but perhaps we could maybe lean in on some of this conflict stuff. There's a little bit of that going around. I actually heard, I don't know, sometimes I just wish it wasn't so, but I heard that insurance companies over the next 24 months, as policies come up for renewal, like homeowners policies, are in the process of adding war exclusions to homeowners policies. So so the insurance companies are, you know, and admittedly they're insurance companies. They're, you know, they have actuarial tables and they work off of even remote probabilities. But at some level, they're saying it's bad business right now to be insuring American homes in the event that they get blown up in a war. And that's a little bit of a harbinger, or at least an indicator that conflict resolution is a valid skill these days. So maybe we start there. And I'd love to, you know, rather than rehash a lot of your kind of backstory and everything, I'd rather say to the audience, go listen to that episode. Like I said, it was well received, and get caught up, and then come tune in here and let's pick up with what the heck is going on in the world. And just like at a meta level, do you have thoughts, and where do you think is a good place to start to try to, you know, improve the audience's life?
Well, the way that I approach any complex situation is by thinking of it on a me, we world level, me, we world. And when I think about conflict, and I come to the most obvious place, right? We can say war, and that's on a world level. Mm-hmm. We can say divides, perhaps on a political level, perhaps in marriages, divorce, families splitting up. We can talk about divides within ourselves, which is the divide between our body and our mind. So our mind says 6 hours of sleep is fine, and our body is heavy. So there's, or I'm laying in bed, my bladder says time to empty, and my mind says not now. There's autoimmune diseases that have been on the rise in a really exponential way, especially for women. What is an autoimmune disease? It's your own defense system, your own immune system attacking you. So is there conflict in the world? There's enormous conflict in the world. But whenever I look at it, I put it into context and say, as stress increases, we literally divide within ourselves, where our body and mind are on two different pages. Or we say, you got to make money, so it doesn't matter what you do, just get the money in. And so we split from our heart and our spirit and our soul and what matters, so that we can make enough food, you know, money to get food on the table, make enough money to make our retirement goals, whatever it is. In that space, we disconnect from ourselves. So the conflict begins within. And one of the things I say is peace worldwide starts from inside. And so when you think, if this is having you feel helpless or like, oh my God, you know, there's too many big things going on in the world and I'm not, how am I going to make an impact? What I want every person listening to know is you absolutely can make an impact, because you want to first pay attention to where the conflict is inside you, between you and those you love and lead, and then start thinking about it, community, world, and bigger. So you brought it up with insurance, you know, and that's somebody trying to protect themselves, right? And saying we're at a higher risk in on the world level of conflict.
So this is really, really, for me, this is really germane to the work that I do in Entra. We have an entrepreneurial education platform, but what we really do that I think is different is we don't so much, or we do not only focus on, let's call it the skills or the tactics of, you know, building or launching or scaling, whatnot, a business. But a lot of, we really use it as, we call it a Trojan horse, right? That like wanting to have a business and have financial autonomy is our Trojan horse to get you to invite us behind the walls of your city gates, so that we can unleash all the personal development and all the psychological and emotional transformation and all the healing and all the stuff that people really truly need, but may not know they may not be thinking of it as what they want, but it's potentially what they really need. And so we use entrepreneurial training as a, you know, really a crucible in which people can transform themselves. And so at our, especially at our events, this really is what, you know, a big part of what we're after is helping people establish that internal balance, and that we call it equanimity, right? The ability to hold themselves emotionally stable across all levels of chaos and intensity. And that's, you know, it's reason enough to do that work, just so that like in the moment of a difficult business decision, you won't be emotional or reactive, and you'll instead be a strong leader and make a good decision. But we our secret motive, maybe not so secret, our motive is that if we can install that for everyone, then we actually could change the world. Because if everybody's non-reactive, I mean, that's all world peace is. It's a bunch of people that won't react to each other. And so I'm curious, if you have any thoughts for people around how to start proactively, you know, almost like inoculating themselves to not get caught up in the reactive energy that is the zeitgeist of the world right now.
Well, I think if I bring it down to themselves and how you figure it out, it's one thing. Once again, we can do the me-we world on this. We can do me reacting to myself. So I'm the one who probably gets triggered when somebody doesn't give me funding or says no to what I've just pitched them, or wants numbers on my social media that maybe I don't have yet, or whatever it is. So the first place you want to notice how to navigate is within yourself. So the way that you know that is A, by understanding the blueprint that has been laid for you in your childhood and your world. So I'll just say, for me, I got sent away when I was young. And so when I reintegrated, I lived with my grandparents for a couple of years. When I reintegrated with my family, it was really hard. I started getting bullied by my older sister. It was really hard to not be with who I thought were my parents. They were my grandparents. And all of a sudden, belonging and abandonment became my triggers. Now, if I don't know my own blueprint, my own emotional landmine, my own ways in which I get reactive, then it's like walking in a desert, but like not knowing where the landmines are. But when you actually reflect back on your life, right? Entrepreneurs, let's just say this, because I'm one as well. I'm an all or none kind of person. I grew up trying to take that same family of origin and impress them. I wanted them to love me, like me, you know, notice me, think I was important. So what did I do? I became an engineer like my dad wanted me to. I became a doctor like the Indian community wanted me to. And then what did I become to the world? Indispensable. A doctor, people always need a doctor. And not only do you need one in an emergency. So what drove me here are some clues of my own reactivity and triggers that will set my own internal landmines off. So when I'm thinking outside with my team, when I'm thinking in the world, well, if someone excludes me and I don't feel like I belong, I'll be 2 years old, just like that again, where I didn't belong in my own family, where I felt abandoned. So when I get rejected, right, all of a sudden it's like I'm back there again. And I think you did it to me, but you didn't do anything to me. You just said yes or no to something. And my experience was of something that I haven't either known about myself, realized, thought was a long time ago and didn't care, that is showing up right now in this moment to let me know it's not healed. Right? So for me, the big ones are abandonment, a sense of belonging, feeling included. That's a big one for me. So if we each know that about ourselves, now just imagine we start building teams in pressure cookers, in entrepreneurial settings, and we all want to win. We want to get the next round of funding. We want to get the next product out. We want to do whatever it is. And now what we're navigating is everybody's landmines together. And so now you've got this, what seems really complex and oh my God, but the way that you start is by knowing yourself. Because when you are reactive, the first place to go is, I always ask myself, so I know how my body tells me too. It tells me with throat constriction and stomach turning. It tells me sometimes with a headache that starts or some neck pain. So if I know that, we're sitting in a meeting and all of a sudden that tension starts. Guess what? My body just let me know that I'm at the end of my rope on stress, that something's triggering me, something's happening. So now when I'm engaging with someone else, I have an awareness to like breathe, slow down, ground myself. So I'd say the very first place you start is doing something that let's give them, you know, a way that they can practically do this. I call it a life map. Just take a blank piece of paper, draw like a spiral all the way inward. And then just put I put a little head with my hair is curly, a curly thing. And I say born 1970. Okay. Next event, Africa. I went there with my grandparents for 2 years. Next event, my little sister was born. So I draw like a little face of a little stick figure. Next, my uncle died when I was 10 years old on a plane crash. So you just go in your life and you just draw like a little symbol, even a heart if you fell in love, a heart that has an X through it if your heart got broken. This is not like, I'm not asking them to become Picasso. I'm saying like, just put a little symbol for all the highs and lows of your life, and then all the way until now, okay? And then I want you to look at that, and I want you to tell me, what patterns are there for the highs and the lows? What lights you up and gets you going? Was it getting an A? Was it getting national championships in tennis? Was it, you know, what broke your heart? Was it your relationships, or was it losing at something? Was it losing money? Was it losing friendships? What was it? And you look at your life and you start to see some patterns and you start to know, oh, wow, For me, it always has to do with people, and it always has to do with broken relationships or not feeling like part of the group. So now I have a sense of where I get triggered. Where are these emotional landmines? And then once you have the highs and lows, you can start being able to help navigate you in relation to others.
So I love where this is going. And I do think, you know, first of all, I just want to say, you know, as a, you know, paradigm for what we're talking about, that all, you know, I think there's a lot of work being done in the world to try to solve problems at systemic levels by people often that are not also trying to solve the problem at the individual level or ask maybe the same tough questions of themselves. It's very easy to go in and say, as a sociologist, I'm going to try to apply my theories to re-engineer this population of 12 million people. That's a lot more comfortable than saying, I need to look at why I always yell at my 4-year-old, right? So turning the mirror onto ourselves, I approve very much. I mean, frankly, if everybody did that, no one would need to fix anything at a systemic level because we'd all just be working on ourselves.
Isn't it great that if we did that, everyone would only be responsible for one person?
Yeah,
and we wouldn't be
well, and we wouldn't be shooting all over each all the time. Well, you should do that. You should do that. It's just like, you know, we all just work on ourselves. But I think it's interesting. For you know, a couple of things come to mind as you're sharing. First of all, and I've done a lot of the same work for myself too, so I know how valuable it is. But you know, for someone that was worried about acceptance and impressing people and not, let's say, disappointing people and all the things that you described, what shifted? And I know we touched on this in our last conversation, but I'd like to maybe revisit it through this lens of like, what shifted that allowed you to even do what you do now and be who you are now? Because clearly you broke free of those you know, needs, or you would not be the entrepreneurial, you know, maverick that you are now. You'd still be a doctor, most likely. So, well, not that you're not a doctor, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, well, I think what you're really saying is I'd be practicing in a hospital in the traditional way.
Yeah, and you'd be doing what you were doing.
Yeah, and what I'd say is a couple things happened. One was that this little girl had a strategy that was going to keep her safe when she was young, which is please the adults around you. Do what they say. They're going to love you and they'll take care of you. And then no one will send you away again.
Yeah.
As I did that, and I became an engineer for my dad and I became a doctor for my mom in the Indian community, I'll never forget the day that when I graduated, my parents, actually a little before I graduated from residency, my dad was saying to me, actually both of them, so Naya, when are you going to marry a good Indian boy? So I was like 28 years old-ish. And I thought, you guys, I haven't even finished engineering and medicine yet. Like now you're already starting with the grandkids? Like what's going on here? So I didn't say much. And then at 30 came and went. And it changed. It was, so Neha, when are you going to get married? 38 came. And my very conservative arranged marriage Indian parents, not very conservative, but pretty traditional, said to me, we don't care what order you do it in, just give us grandkids. And there was something that I learned around 32-ish, which was if engineering and medicine weren't enough, nothing was ever going to be enough. Mm-hmm. It nearly broke me. I burned out at 33, 34 years old. And what I realized in that burnout was it's the worst thing that could have happened to me. I felt isolated from my patients. I felt like I had failed. My colleagues would look down on me and judge me. The worst thing in the world that I thought could happen just happened. And what I realized was I was still okay. That nightmare that I had been protecting from myself from for a really long time, like I didn't belong, like I burned out, I had to go out on leave, I had to be isolated for months. Everyone would know I was gone from work, not carrying my load. All the ideas of the failure that I had been working so hard to avoid, one day they just all showed up. And what I realized was, wow, everything I've been doing isn't going to save me from this. I've done everything I know how to do, and people still want more. So maybe instead of trying to please everyone in each room that I walk into, this feels like an endless game. What would it feel like to do the real work, which is figuring out who I am and what lights me up? Because that felt like the only way to actually be at peace. Otherwise, it's almost like when the goalpost changes, it just keeps changing. And so what I realized was while I was searching for everyone else's approval and their accolades from them and wanting peace with them, I didn't have peace inside me. So I felt like I was always running, always trying to do something else, and it would never end. So I think when I burned out, it really was that moment, which was, oh, this is the worst thing in the world that I think could have happened. It's here, and I'm still okay. So I wasn't that little girl anymore. I had now grown up, and the much bigger work began, which is, okay, your parents, in all goodwill, wanted you to do these things, but if it's not you in this format, take what you've learned and appreciate about all of these things and figure out what is you.
Yeah, I read a blog post recently, and then I dug into it a little more, and it actually took me to some data on the National Institute of Health website, which always tells the truth, right? But I digress. No, but in this case, I believe it. It was a blog post from somebody in palliative care, you know, end of life medicine, and it was. And it referenced a larger study, but it was about the number one regret of the dying. And you talked about that. Yeah, I think as a marketer, like an entrepreneur, which means perpetually I'm trying to get people's attention to, you know, be interested in maybe want to buy stuff, which means really being a storyteller. So I'm always interested in the hero's journey, right? Like, what is the call to adventure? What is the crisis, the resolution, the catharsis, the transformation, the rebirth, and, you know, the emergence, right? That's how I think of these stories. And so I'm always looking at that crisis point. And, you know, archetypally, it happens anywhere from 30s to 50s, right? The so-called midlife. But the sad data, to go back to the number one regret of the dying, is that most people actually, midlife crises tend to be, to the extent that that's a real thing, they tend to be more social in nature. But in terms of being like sort of existential, most people's crisis is actually on their deathbed. And the number one thing that gets said, I'm going to probably butcher the paraphrase, but it's essentially, I know it's around courage. I wish that I had the courage to live my life.
Yeah.
And not the life that was laid out for me by other people. That's basically what the vast majority of people arrive at in their last hours of life. And so when I meet someone like you, or I would say I'm fortunate in this regard too, that I reach that point. And actually a lot of the people that I interview on my show have that moment that they describe, where it's that moment where it's like, I'm just not going to live for anyone else anymore.
Yeah. And I think, you know, I think the secret, I find that when we come to these pivotal moments in our lives, the pendulum swings one way where I was like the ultimate people pleaser. I probably had a PhD in people pleasing. And then I say, like, I'm not living my life for anybody else, right? And then you find your way in the middle ground, because I'm still that girl who wants connection and wanted to belong. And so in the end, what I believe the secret is to allow feedback in, have the connection and belonging with other people. And then when it's time to make a decision, turn up the sound of your own heart slightly louder than you can hear the voices of others. And it becomes more of a gentle place, a dance of our hearts and our ability to be together. And I think sometimes people say, you know, you got to not listen to your heart. You got to be really logical and not get swept away with it. But the more I've learned, the more I actually trust the wisdom of my heart. My heart in a GPS navigation system of me, which is like my intuition, my body's physical signals, my throat clenching, my mind telling me things. My heart is the blue map, the blue dot on the GPS map. That one that says you are here now. And think about how important it is to know the blue dot. Because if you don't know where the blue dot is, you don't even know whether you're supposed to go north on the highway or south. You wouldn't know without the blue dot. So I think this idea of us learning to be less reactive, but be more tuned into our hearts, because what your heart is, what emotions are, they're just data of how you're relating to the experience of your life in this moment. Wouldn't you want that data? And here's the trick with an entrepreneurial adventurous life. We get accolades and rewards from the world for the extremes. I raised $7 million. I raised $50 million. It's like, what gets the attention are the extremes. But what makes you a successful entrepreneur over time? The steadiness. So to be an amazing entrepreneur, you have to hold the paradox of extremes with self-care and routine, the ups and downs and the waves with the steadiness of your heart, feeling the highs and the lows, but not making rash decisions that undermine you, right? And so to me, the beauty of entrepreneurship is you must understand the data of your inner navigation system in order to ride a crazy, sometimes crazy wave of entrepreneurial adventure.
Well, I just want to say thank you for honing in on the idea of entrepreneurship as really an adventurous approach to life rather than like building a VC-backed startup. we have this extremely narrow view of that term in the modern lexicon, but when you really understand, I mean, the reason I run a platform called Entre Institute is because I'm Y Combinator and I'm trying to decide which startup to fund, but because I'm calling everyone to this adventurous life. Literally the word entrepreneur translates from the French to undertaker, which isn't a perfect match in English because it means something different, you know, around the death industry, but it means one who undertakes an adventure. It basically means adventurer from the French. And there's all these different use cases of the word in 19th century French when it was first coined by a French economist, Jean-Baptiste Say. You can tell I'm an entrepreneur nerd here, but all the different early use cases of it were all these different iterations of like, that basically meant adventure or people trying to bring their vision to life or people trying to make a difference or a change in the world or people connecting, you know, innovation to capital or it's the disruptors of the world, right? It's kind of like that Steve Jobs, you know, people that are crazy enough to think they can change the world are the ones that actually do it. That's basically entrepreneur. It's not about raising money for your startup. And so I think that the term a lot of times feels exclusionary or alienating to some people who are like, I don't see myself as an entrepreneur. I would argue in the modern world, the new Darwinian survival is survival of the most entrepreneurial. It's the people who have intelligent abilities to calculate and tolerate appropriate amounts of risk as opposed to just default avoiding risk, which was the survival formula for most of human history, was just avoid as much risk as much of the time as possible. Now, I think that's a recipe for deathbed regret, futility, never being able to retire, never even probably being able to afford a good cut of steak in your life. I mean, it's not even just financially, but like there's just so many things that I think our relationship with risk needs to be renegotiated now. And I think my crackpot theory is that in evolutionary terms, our brains are actually changing in the way that we sort of adaptively prioritize or deprioritize risk tolerance. But anyway, that's a whole other theory. But yes, I want to say thank you for honing in on that entrepreneurial adventure concept. And you referenced a moment when you asked yourself the question around, what if I do the work? I think that's what you said. Like, well, what if I do the work? And that really sounds like the moment when you embraced the idea of living an entrepreneurial adventure as opposed to, you know, trying to live out the plot of a book that someone else wrote for your life. So mm-hmm. when you said, what if I do the work, what did that actually mean in practical terms? What was the work? What did it look like? How did you start? And maybe anything that anybody else could hear and say, oh, that's a place I could start too. Hey there, it's Jeff. So real quick, I want to let you know about my text message community. I use text messages to provide unique value to the Unlock Your Potential community. These texts could just be random thoughts. It could be letting you be the first to know about an event I'm planning, maybe giving an update on a special I'm running or some free training that I host for my community. Anyway, just shoot me a text to get subscribed to the list. The number is 702-996-3926. Again, that is 702-996-3926. Let's get back to the podcast.
There's a few things going on. One is we collectively as a society have decided that what is valuable is us putting our minds together and speeding up the external world. Because we think faster is better, do more with less, profit over people, all sorts of beliefs that a lot of people have bought into. If they spend their life believing that these things are fine and they fit right in to whatever the mold is all the way and they sail it out, what an entrepreneur does is an entrepreneur says, this works, this doesn't, this makes sense, this doesn't, this, and that's the disruptor that starts because you don't go with whatever the collective has said is the way things are. You're also using what works inside you, that blue dot, like, yeah, this works for me. I'm here now. This works, right? Now, when you ask me about, so now that the external world is moving so much faster, all the way from, you know, the industrial age to computers to smartphones to AI to it's all getting faster and faster. Now, staying still within us makes you obsolete because the outside world is moving at a very different pace than it moved 100, 200, 1,000 years ago. So now, yes, we are adapting. The moment that for me was I actually had taken we had three electives that we could do in our medical residency. And I decided one of them was for me to get as far away from where I was as possible. And I went down under. I went to Australia and I went to a retreat on the Gold Coast called Camp Eden, like an outdoor adventure, like obstacle course retreat. Mm-hmm. And I thought, well, that would be different than anything else I'm doing. I'm using my brain 24/7. Why don't I do this? And as I sat there, the leader of the retreat handed me, it was me and 27 Aussies, handed me this rose quartz stone and said, Neha, you're our guest. Why don't you begin the retreat by saying, if I spoke from the heart, I would say. My first thought was, I don't speak from the heart. I speak from my head and mouth. But then I was like, all right, like I'll do what they're asking me to do. And by the way, I'm halfway around the world. No one can hear me here. And I said, if I could speak from the heart, I would say, I think I've lived my life for everyone but me. I think I've made my father proud and become an engineer. I think I've made my mother in the Indian community and my grandparents proud and I've become a doctor. But if I say the truth, I ran away here, halfway around the world when I got a moment to explore an elective. I wanted to run away from it all. So I find myself here with you. And what I'm really wondering is, everyone was like so compassionate and listening and my tears are flowing down my face. And that's when I said, if I've lived my life for everyone but me and I blamed them Listen, they did it all with good intentions. I mean, being an engineer and doctor isn't the worst thing in the world that you end up with, right? But what I realized was I was blaming them for my unhappiness when I'm actually the one who filled out the applications, did the problem sets, took the overnight calls. So I wanted something more than they wanted for me because I did it.
Mm-hmm.
And what I really realized was, wow, I think I wanted their love, belonging, and affirmation. And I wonder what would happen if I actually got curious about what I wanted. And so it was that moment where somebody outside me asked me to think about me. And my now I'm, of course, the thing that I care about is everybody liking me. I'm sitting there, 27 Aussies who don't know me are all looking at me. I want to get an A, so I want to do it well. And he asked me to say, if I spoke from the heart, what would I say? And so I did, but I had never given myself that permission. And so there's something about needing to slow down in order to speed up and realign. And that goes along with the GPS metaphor. If I don't use my heart to let me know where I am right here, right now, and I was heartbroken. I was like at the end of all my schooling. I was 31 years old. I was in debt, hundreds of thousands of dollars. I was supposed to be at the pinnacle of all of this schooling, but something in my heart was heavy. And I had never slowed down enough to check in. So I'm forever grateful for this man handing me that stone. And you know, the truth be told, I thought I was waiting for judgment and all sorts of like, you can't do that. And how ungrateful are you? And not right for speaking my truth. But what I got was 27 compassionate Aussies looking at me with tears in their eyes, just holding this space for, we know you're going to figure it out. And when you do, it's going to be amazing. And so that belief in me and me looking around and realizing that I was halfway around the world and it wasn't anybody else who needed to hear it. I needed to hear it. And it was the first time I had the courage to say it out loud. So when I burned out, which was a few years later, that was like a reawakening of that moment in Australia. Because even if you have that moment that I had on the Gold Coast, there's enough shock in the moment of realizing this isn't my passion. But then you're like, what am I going to do about that? Like the doing is like a whole another chapter. Like, how do I get the tools to align?
So that, what a great piece to double click on, because we, you know, for me, I'm just coming off like 2 days ago, I came home from one of our events. We do an event at Entre every month where we have, you know, usually between 100 and 250, you know, ranges people who are like, it's kind of like what you described. It's, you know, it's not in Australia and I'm sure it looks different, but we're essentially drawing out those same types of elucidating questions, right? Like, what do you, because again, most people, it's ironic that what you said at 31 was what most people say on their deathbed, right? Which is, I've been living someone else's life. So yeah. I'm happy that you were asked at 31, not, you know, later on your deathbed, but we have that same thing. But one of the things we're always talking about, we actually have a part of our process that we call reintegration, which is like, you're here outside your normal environment, having this, you know, almost like anti-reality experience. This is not your daily reality. You're in a safe place. You're surrounded by different types of people. And, but, you know, let's say tomorrow you're going to go home. And there's all this inertia waiting for you as soon as you reconnect to your life. So how do you, you know, like in your case, it's you said it took a few years where you had this clarity, but then it took a few years of being back in your call it your old normal life to actually run aground and bottom out to where you were able to go back to that moment of clarity and say, okay, now this is so untenable, I'm going to do something about it in my normal life. Do you have any advice in retrospect or thoughts around how to not have that reintegration piece take 3 years for someone, as opposed to, I want to take this clarity and apply it to the rest of my life starting now?
Yeah, I wanted to find what you do monthly. Like, I didn't know. I kept saying, like, I want to find Camp Eden in the US. I want to know where people are doing these things, where I'm going, right? And so really what I'd say is finding like-minded individuals who challenge themselves in their own self-awareness, who are interested in their own growth and learning. When you become part of a community, you will accelerate and catalyze your learning and growth. And a lot of times what people need are the frameworks of the learning. Like, where do I go to get people that I trust to ask me the questions that I need to? And we live in a world now with YouTube and, you know, a lot more self-awareness after the pandemic. And a lot of people like you and I who are saying much more openly, clearly, and, you know, on a megaphone, like, hey guys, this is really going to help you align back to yourself. And so what I'd say is figure out who you've considered as mentors in your life and what was it about them that you admired. Find that, right? If you can articulate it, find that and start the process online, in person, a community. And the more you can make that a regular part of your routine, like, don't just do it when things are hard and you fall apart, but like, what if we could each become a self-cleaning oven? That like every experience, interaction, relationship is a way for us to grow, learn, and heal and become more of ourselves. What if we started to view every interaction like this one with me and you? If I'm in life school and I meet you, I wonder what lesson we're going to learn together, what this interaction is going to bring us, how you and I are going to grow as souls that connected through a screen in this moment. If I come with that interest, that curiosity about how I'm going to grow and stretch and become more of me, it becomes not just an entrepreneurial adventure to give things to other people, but an entrepreneurial adventurous life that we live. And so I think, you know, I think about it in the quality of relationships that we build, because I do really believe that the quality of your life is determined by the quality of your relationships, and the quality of your relationships are determined by the quality of your conversations and on what level you engage. So like, I'll give you a quick little rundown here. This is my next book coming out, but I'm going to give it right here. So it's level, you know, one is broken relationships. That means someone's not with you. They're not even there. It's broken, misaligned, or distant, non-existent. Next level of relationship. This one is adversarial at best, but it's someone who's with you, but they're not for you. So they undermine you, they backstab you, there's all sorts of mistrust and misalignment that is there. Next level. This is transactional. This is about someone who's with you, but they're for themselves. So the reason they're engaging with you is so they can get something from you. Next level is someone's with you and they're for you. That's relational. They care about you. Yeah, you might have some transactional exchanges that occur, but they care. So they go to the relational level, right? And then there is the highest level, which I call sacred exchanges. And that's really what I feel like we do here, where there's moments of resonant truth. We venture into the unknown together, letting our hearts, our minds, and our spirit, our passion lead us in whatever direction the conversation wants to go. But we know it's going to be real. We know we're going to bounce off each other. We're going to pick up. We're going to notice what the physical sensations of our body says, oh, that's important. Pay attention. And then we're going to try to articulate it, even if it's not perfect, in the hope that anyone listening might hear a bit of alchemy for themselves, a bit of resonant truth that shifts them, that gives them the courage that I found that day when he said, if you spoke from the heart, what would you say? And 27 people who didn't know me held space. So I know, I can feel it in me.
I can hear it in you.
Yeah. And so those moments to me, when my voice quivers, when my heart, the sound of my heart gets turned up, when tears can fill my eyes, like, those are sacred exchanges. And as a doctor, I would venture to tell you that I was 27 years old, sitting at the bedside of people who were dying. Maybe that's when I learned what mattered and that my life, you know, needed to be for a purpose greater. I don't know the exact moment. I do know that there's milestones where I became aware of it. And what I wish for everybody on this entrepreneurial adventure of their life, of their business, and of the greater collective world together, what I wish is that we tune in to our hearts, that we listen, honor, and respect it without feeling like we're at the mercy of it, that it's controlling us. But in fact, we lean in with confidence, with clarity, with awareness to the wisdom of our heart and our soul so that it can navigate us together.
A lot to respond to in what you said. You know, we started by saying we were going to dig in on the conflict piece. And as you were speaking, I'll share personally, I'm in the middle of some conflict right now in my life. And so I've been thinking a lot about how to manage a certain part of my life so that A, it doesn't spill over and start to consume or taint other parts of my life. And also so that it doesn't change me into someone that I don't want to be, someone that's not loving and not empathetic. And, you know, we can have disagreements or misalignment of interests or I call it conflict, but it doesn't have to be aggression and it doesn't have to be anger and all those things. And so a few things, you know, from that viewpoint in hearing what you were saying, first of all, you were talking about if I were speaking from the heart, what would I say? And as soon as you said that, in my mind, and I've been working very much partly as a podcast host to not listen to try to figure out what I'm going to say back,
mm-hmm.
but just to be with, just mm-hmm. to listen. You know, Will Rogers said, if we weren't expected to respond, most of us wouldn't bother to listen, which is so brilliant, first of all, it's so true. And so I've taken that to heart, like, because it's like scary when you're a podcast host, like to not be formulating your next question or whatnot, and just to be with the guest. But as you were speaking, it popped into I found that the less I try to, you know, sound smart or prepared by having the ready comeback, the more these novel, you know, thoughts from somewhere, not from me, I don't think, come into my mind. And right when you said, if I were speaking from my heart, this is what I would say, it immediately counterpointed in my mind, if I were listening from my heart, this is what I would hear.
Mm.
And it was right after that, you got choked up.
Mm.
Now I'm getting choked up.
Yeah.
And I've sort of reached this point, and conflict is a catalyst for this for me. It's got me thinking about it lately, where like, I want to be essentially conflict proof in my life. And when I say that, it doesn't mean I won't have misalignment or disagreements. It means I'm not going to give external conflict or external circumstance. You know, it's kind of like Viktor Frankl's whole, like the mm-hmm. last thing, even in Auschwitz, the last thing they could take from me is my choice in how I respond to things. Like I want to find that place. And what I've found is, the best way to be a conflict resistant person is just to see and love people well. Like if all our world leaders were consistently in the business of seeing people as people and loving them and listening from their heart, I don't know how you would go to war. I don't know how you would accept some of the sacrifices that they're willing to accept. It's almost like it requires, and I have a certain, I'm no world leader, but I have a certain amount of, call it power in my life as the CEO of a decent sized company. And there's always this temptation to just fortify yourself within your position. And stop seeing people. And so I don't know, at this point, I guess I think more than anything, I know we're over time and I'm sort of babbling. I'm probably just saying thank you for having a human moment.
Yeah, well, thank you. And I think a lot of times, you know, both of us tearing up and both of us just kind of allowing whatever is real or resonant or truthful to be here. And then in that moment, just allowing the space for us to trust one another to be there. I think that's the one thing I'd really like to conclude with, which is people say to me, Neha, you really lead with your heart. And don't you get embarrassed sometimes if you tear up or, you know, if you, doesn't it make you in front of a corporate audience or whatever, feel embarrassed? And I have really come around on this. When I was younger and I was really worried about what people thought of me, I was humiliated. In fact, I would just crumble even more. But now I have a different view about tears and feeling touched or tears in general. And what it is that I trust myself enough and I trust you enough and everybody listening enough to allow them close to my heart. And that is a sacred exchange. And the way you just described listening is the other part of that sacred exchange. And I really felt that. So thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Wonderful. In a way that I did not at all anticipate, I think we did a lot of work on conflict resolution here. So thanks for being a guest on the show, Dr. Sangwan.
You bet. You bet. And I really, if there's people that want to learn about this, there's, you know, I do live retreats. So I have the biggest one I have all year is coming up at Omega Institute, June 9th to the 14th. And I spend 5 days with people helping them navigate burnout, helping them navigate wherever they are in conflict or what their relationships, whatever it is. And so I'd really love to do that. If anyone listening is interested in that, I'd love to do it with you.
Is that something they can learn about at your website, Intuitive Intelligence Inc., or is that a different place?
It probably will be on the, I really should have checked, but I would imagine it would be on the events page. And if not, just go to Omega Institute in Rhinebeck, New York, and put my name in, Neha Sangwan, and June 9th to the 14th.
How about socials? Can they follow you there?
You bet. So at Dr. Neha, DocTorNeha, and then on LinkedIn, it's Neha Sangwan, MD.
Okay, we'll get all those links and put them in the show notes for the audience. Again, Dr. Sangwan, thank you so much for being a guest on Unlock Your Potential. It's been a wonderful conversation.
Absolutely. Let's keep the conversation going.
For sure. And of course, to all you viewers and listeners out there, you're the best part of the show, why we do it every single time out, and can't wait to do it again. Take care. Hey, it's Jeff here. So if you liked this episode of Unlock Your Potential, it would mean so much if you would like and share the episode on whatever platform you're listening or viewing on. And if you really like what we're doing here and you enjoy this podcast each week, please consider leaving us a review. There is so much work that goes into these episodes, and you leaving a positive review lets us know that our work is reaching people and it helps us grow our audience. In fact, your review could be the reason that someone else decides to tune in, checks out the podcast, and unlocks their potential, levels up their entire quality of life. So thank you, thank you, thank you again so much for your support and for listening, and especially if you like or share or leave us a review. Thank you in general for just helping us spread the word, and thank you for unlocking your potential and going out and making the world and your world a better place.